House Joint Resolution 86, Senator from Saline.
HR 86 be brought before the body.
You've heard the motion by the Senator from Saline. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. Senator from Saline.
Mr. President, I think we have a Senate substitute pending. I would like to send that back and send forward a new Senate substitute.
Yeah. Secretary, send a substitute back. Senator, send your substitute forward.
It has been distributed. I ask for the waiver of the reading.
Hearing no objections. Senator, did you move the adoption of the substitute?
Move for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
You heard the motion? Proceed. Senator, proceed.
The new substitute takes out, it goes to, just says that anything related to the rights to raise animals would require a two-thirds majority through initiative petition. So it gets away from the problems of not letting people have an initiative petition. It just requires a two-thirds majority. I think it's important for us to look at what raising animals means to agriculture. I had a number of phone calls. I've heard one phone call from Senator from Stoddard's district, landowner, seventh generation landowner, basically was in tears, saying that if the proposed amendment by HSUS would pass, that he wouldn't be able to make his farm payments. I was in Lowry City this last week, and a young lady, FFA member, putting herself through college, raising animals. I think it. No one that supports this amendment would support animal abuse in any way, shape, or form. But I think that when you look at the culture in agriculture, you always put your animals first. And with these pet owners, they stay with these animals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I think it's easy for people to use emotional words to try to color them, but most of that has nothing to do with reality. The way agriculture looks at its animals, I was visiting with Senator Doctorian last Wednesday, and he was telling me, I asked him how he was doing. He's raising a few cows, and he and his daughter had gone out to pasture, checked the cows. They found a cow that had a calf but couldn't find him.
Let's quiet down. I'm having trouble hearing the Senator from Saline myself.
So his daughter, they circled the pasture and they said, well, the cow will find the calf. It'll be all right. The Senator was uneasy. He went back out. He found a calf had fallen into a ditch deep in mud. This is an older gentleman who's just recovering from some major health problems. Got down, dug the calf out, got stuck in the mud, fell in the water. I mean, people will risk their life for their animals, and for there to be any suggestion otherwise is ludicrous. Any successful producer is going to take care of his animals. If you don't take care of your animals, they don't take care of your family. And so I think it's easy to cast aspersions, but unless you're in the culture, it's very difficult it's very difficult to understand what animals mean to the producer. I think one of the things, when we brought this up before, there was a lot of indications that Missouri didn't have any regulations on raising animals. I circulated the rules from the Department of Agriculture. There's 23 pages. Missouri has a model pet regulation. They were one of the first in the nation to do that. It was passed in 1990, 1991. It is a model used by all other states. So to say that Missouri does not have regulations is simply not the case. I think that it is a major source of funds for the state of Missouri, and I think that it is an industry that we have to protect. I also circulated a series of quotes from HSUS. I think that there's no question in my mind that agriculture is under siege, and I think it's important that we as a state step up and defend agriculture. Mr. President.
Senator from Saline.
Could I inquire the Senator from Dent?
Senator from Dent, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Senator, you have a great number of producers that used to be pork producers that now raise animals, or raise pets.
That's right.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, the hog industry back several years ago became very... Well, we had different segments of the hog industry in different places of the state. A lot of ours were farrow to feeder, which meant that they farrowed sows, bred and farrowed sows, and then when the pigs were from 45 to 65 pounds, they sold those pigs on to a finisher.
Actually, I did that for about, I mean, that was my, Sue Ellen's job at home was 50 sows, and
yep.
She and the kids raised the sows so she could stay at home and raise the kids.
Yeah, and so that industry changed, and the ability to market that size pigs in a large amount was pretty well, that market got taken over by those that were farrowing to finish. And so they didn't have that middle ground of area. So those people had facilities that were in place to take care of hogs that very well fit the same standards that were put into place in 90 or 91 or 92 with our care standards that were debated out here legislatively. Both sides, animal protection groups as well as agriculture was there at the table, and they came up with these care standards, of which fit very well for those hog producers that no longer were producing feeder pigs and their facilities. So then they had another mechanism to make money in agriculture and be able to raise their families and to stay on the farms. Now then, it appears like those individuals are under attack again.
You know, this family that I talked to in Lowry City last week, you know, they were putting their kids through college. The kids were helping with the pets, pets, and they were putting their kids through college, and they're teaching their kids a skill, and you know, it was something that was a family industry, and they were being taxpayers and really supporting the folks in the state. And I think we've got a number of folks in that category.
We do. We've got lots of families that are trying to stay on their farms. They've tried to be as diverse in their agriculture as they can, because at no one point in agriculture is one thing at the top of the market at where something else isn't at the bottom. And if you only have one thing that you're raising and you're expecting to be able to survive, there's a lot of times through a lot of years that you will just go in the red. You will lose money year after year. In fact, I think in some people that I've visited with here recently said that this past quarter in the hog industry, and they were farrow to finish, but this past quarter was the first time that they've been in the black since 2007. Since 2007. So they've been running in the red that entire time. And sometimes, I'll tell you, there's been months where you're not sure whether you're even going to be able to get the banker to allow you to extend your loan for another month, just trying to wait for that next paycheck to come in.
I think all of us in agriculture have been there at one point in time or another. And it's amazing that you have to pay for the privilege of producing food and fiber for our nation. But that's the bottom line.
Sure.
You know, last year there were a number of milk producers up here that were in severe stress, And many of those rely on the pet industry to make their farm payments, too.
They do. And that's the only way that some of them that I've worked with, that's the only way that some of them survived through the last year was by being in the pet industry.
And the truth of the matter is that whether you raise pigs or cows or dogs, all that is transferable. And those that do a really good job with one tend to do a really good job with the other. And I know that it's the same way in your area as is mine, that those animals lots of times come ahead of the family. You know, I mean, if you have an animal in distress, you take care of that before you go to the funeral or to the wedding.
My family. Ask them. Ask my wife. Ask our kids. You know, there's lots of times that I'm not able to go to a ball game or go to a school function for the fact that I have an animal that's in distress. They're either out of place, there's something, you know, a health concern that I have to take care of immediately. And so they get precedence because at the end of the day, that's the paycheck.
You know, Senator, I always thought my cows could read the calendar because on Sunday morning or sometime when I had to be somewhere, that's when they always need the most attention. And right. I don't know exactly how they did that or how they got the calendar, but I know that they knew.
Right.
So, anything else, Senator?
Well, there's 100 things we can talk about, that's for sure. 86, what you have before us, if we want to talk a little bit about, you know, just about that.
Well, Senator, I think one of the reasons we need something in the neighborhood of 86 is that it used to be everybody had an uncle or a grandpa or something that was related to agriculture. And today we find people 3 and 4 generations away from the farm. And because they're not closely associated with agriculture, it's easier for them to believe some of the stuff that comes through the media that uses inflammatory words, really not much in basis of fact, but they use inflammatory words. They try to, and because they don't have that close association, it's easier for them to swallow that.
Here's the one thing that I want to be sure that everybody hears. In 1991, we set animal care standards in this state through negotiations with both parties, both sides of this issue, to be sure that we had a standard that was at that time and still is today one of the highest standards across the country, so that in the pet industry we have specific credentials and areas of that we be sure that animals are being cared for. And there's an initiative petition out there right now that sets some standards. And if you look at that initiative petition and you look at those standards that they've put in there, the majority of those standards are the very same standards that we have in the legislature and statute today. And we already have those. But what they're saying or trying to confuse the public about is to say, well, this is all we want, you know, standard care for these animals. They should have fresh water. They should have food in front of them. You know, all of these things. Well, we already have those standards.
Right here.
But what they're trying to tell people is we don't have the standard. And we do. We have it in statute today. But it's very misleading, the propaganda that's being put out, to say that no one that's in the pet industry has to meet these standards. They have to have veterinary care. They have to, you know, they have to be watered. They have to be fed. They have to have pen size so big right now. The hunt breeders or the individuals down in southwest Missouri that have puppies down there, you know, they go ahead and they pull those puppies out and they socialize those dogs. So we have the standards already in place, yet we have an initiative petition before us that's trying to say that we don't.
And that initiative petition is designed to kill the industry.
It is.
Limiting
the number of animals that anybody can have. That's just like us going to Ford, because Ford's looking at maybe doing a new plant and up-tooling or upgrading their plant. It'd be like we going to Ford and saying, you know, we appreciate you in Missouri. We like for you to be here. You can produce 1,000 cars. You can charge whatever you want to, but you can only produce 1,000 cars. Well, that isn't going to be enough cars for Ford to be able to make a make profit enough that they can stay in business. But yet, this is an industry that we are going to limit the number of animals that somebody could have.
Yeah, the thing that amazes me is that the requirements put in the amendment, as far as air conditioning is concerned, cannot be paid for with fewer than 50 animals. And the thing that has happened in the hog industry, we raise regulations, and then at that point you have to have so many animals to spread the cost of the regulations over that it crowds all the small producers out. So by putting these stipulations in, again, back to this lady in Lowry City, she says, we don't have 50 dogs, or 50 intact females, that doesn't bother me, but we can't afford the air conditioning, and because it takes way too many. And you know, Senator, we don't require air conditioning for kids. We sat here and closed a habilitation center in Nevada, Missouri, and there was no filibuster, there was no nothing. So does that mean that we put kids developmentally disabled below dogs? I mean, and that's what we're doing here is creating a higher standard for pets than we have for any other industry or anybody that we take care of, the most vulnerable folks in the state. And it just amazes me that we have this problem, that we have to address this. But, you know, because people are not acquainted with agriculture, because they're not, don't know somebody, don't have an opportunity to visit a farm every once in a while, it's easy for them to swallow some of the propaganda that's put out by these folks that really want to eliminate all pets and all animal agriculture.
But again, I want to go back to these animal care standards that we have. If you address someone with a question of, don't you want the pets to be watered, you know, have fresh water in front of them, be watered daily, don't you want them to be fed, don't you want them to live in a nice confined area or a nice area? I mean, the answer to all of that is yes, but that's exactly what we have already in statute.
Since 1991,
which we were one of the leading states in putting that heavy a burden or restrictions onto our pet breeders at that time.
And Missouri's law is the model for the nation.
They have.
You know, I'd heard that, and finally I was sitting trying to figure out how to solve our problem as being having this reputation that's not very flattering. And so I said, well, what we need to do is restrict brokers from buying from unlicensed dealers. If we make it illegal to buy unlicensed dogs from unlicensed dealers, then it's a lot easier and less expensive to regulate the brokers than it is the dealers. You know what I found out, Senator? It's already illegal. It's a Class A misdemeanor. Unless you want to take it to a felony, you can't get any worse than that.
Right.
And the problem is that in, you know, in federal law, you are not required to have a license unless you have more than 3 intact females. And there's a number of folks that have 3 or fewer that are selling dogs at Walmart or in the parking lot or whatever,
or over the internet or by word of mouth, or
and they are unlicensed, but according to federal law, that's the way it is, and so I think that's where we're getting our reputation, if for those that fall below the federal requirements.
I have a kennel in my district, La Barosa Kennels, and they are a state awarded blue ribbon kennel. They're actually in Owensville, just outside Owensville. Their facility is better than you can imagine. I mean, they have a wonderful facility, but you know the way that they run their dogs on a raised level, and the way that this initiative petition is written with the type of material that they have for the comfort of their dogs won't be allowed. They'll have to be on concrete, which if you've ever seen
dogs on concrete,
what happens is bad feet. They get sored up and they're not able to maneuver. So, I mean, what the industry has found to be the most comfortable for all of those animals, here we are trying to change that standard to be a very uncomfortable position for pets, and yet we want to go out and say that we're doing something that's to the benefit of the pet and of the breeders.
You know, Senator, there's been in my mind, HSUS steals from the local Humane Society, people that actually do good for dogs and deal with dogs, people that try to shelter dogs. You know, I think that they do a really good job.
There ought to be truth in advertising.
There ought to be. There ought to be.
And either through this ballot initiative, I don't think there's truth in advertising, by the fact that the Humane Society of the United States has taken on the word Humane Society in the beginning of their title, I think is no truth in the advertising, besides the fact that they are an organization that I think here just recently actually even took a reduction in their credibility with the not-for-profit organizations. They were just downgraded again because of the lack of money that they actually put back into the care of animals.
Less than 0.5%.
Yeah.
So, well, Senator, anything else?
It's your inquiry. So
thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from Saline.
Could I inquire to the Senator from Webster?
Senator from Webster, do you yield to the Senator from Saline's inquiry?
Gladly, Mr. President.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, you're right down in the middle of dairy country, which has been under tremendous stress the last several years. Do you have any dog breeders in the area?
I do. We've worked together for, ever since I've been in the Senate. And so we're just, I've talked about this issue with them a lot. I've tried to let them know that what they're up against in HSUS, and because, you know, it's a very viable industry in my area, and we all are against the bad actors. And that's what's gotten it's a perception thing, Senator. It's a perception thing where you humanely raise livestock or dogs or anything like that. It's a perception thing that people like HSUS have used the Humane Society, that name, and got saying that we don't do a good job or we don't get rid of our bad actors. That's the farthest thing from the truth, Senator. And anybody knows, like, you and the Senator from Dent we're talking about, I've been up so many nights treating cows for milk fever, been up 2 and 3 in the morning delivering calves when it's 10 below. And do you think that when it's my livelihood that I'm not going to take proper care of a dog or a cow or even chickens?
Now you're pushing, Senator. No, I think that, and I think the industry is doing a lot. I know that the industry is working with USDA to try to solve the problem, because it is distressing when a family gets a pup that is not healthy and is not what was purported to be. And I know that the Hunt Corporation and the professional animal breeders and a number of folks are working with USDA now, trying to be sure that they can put the best face forward on the industry. And they've been doing this since 1991. And it's one of those things that is, again, I think it's a disconnect between our city cousins and the rural areas. And
Senator, I might also add that I think that the department's one, the VAG, has done a wonderful job in the state of Missouri. I mean, they've really policed and got rid of all, with the money that they have and the shortness of staff, they've done a wonderful job finding the very small percentage of bad actors.
And I think it doesn't matter what law we pass. If we don't put the dollars behind it, to pay for inspections, nothing's going to change. Whereas I think that the industry is dedicated to clean this up, and I think they will continue to do so.
Well, you know, I think, Senator, that we're finally getting it, that we're trying to get the picture out there and the perception out there of the job that we really do in agriculture, regardless of what field. I was elated to hear on the radio yesterday coming up, Matt Holliday doing commercials for farmers. I was, and I don't know that ball player's background very well, but I was, you know, I could see that he was a down-home boy talking about the good practices that we do, and I think we're getting it. And hopefully people will start to listen. We just have to keep hammering the message home.
Well, we'll keep working at it and trying to get the message out that these are high-quality family enterprises that pay taxes, send their kids to college, and are fine, upstanding citizens.
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, agriculture is everything. It's everything in your world and everything in mine. So, you know, we'll keep hammering it home.
Thank you. Mr. President?
Thank you.
Senator from Saline.
Could I inquire the senator from Jasper?
The senator from Jasper, do you yield to the inquiry?
I yield.
He does proceed.
Senator, I think down your neck of woods you have a group that does a tremendous job raising pets. What can you tell me a little bit about that?
There's a company that's located actually in the senator from Lawrence's district, just barely across the line from my district. The owner lives in my district in Joplin. It's called the Hunt Corporation. And they are the leading pet suppliers in the United States. I think they're the leading pet suppliers in the world. And I've been to the facility on a number of occasions. They are the state-of-the-art pet suppliers. It's really much more like a hospital than anything else. So many of the members of the staff are veterinarians. And what they do is they take the animals, both kittens and puppies, but primarily puppies. Like over 90% of the animals are puppies. And before they will purchase them, there's a screening process. And the veterinarians examine the animals, examine their health, and they examine their genetic traits. And then they buy on a quality basis. They have a very high standard that they apply before they'll purchase an animal. And then the animals are purchased basically on the grade and quality. And so one of the ways that they impact on dog breeding is to create a market for quality. And so the better breeders are able to make more money. And clearly, inferior breeders produce inferior products. And so the health and the care of the animals becomes critical in the quality of the animals. It's just like breeding cattle. Poor cattle breeders breed poor cattle. And the same thing's true with dogs or cats. And so the way they impact on the marketplace is they improve the quality of the breeder operations because of their price point marketing in the purchasing of the animals. And the it's an extraordinarily clean facility, and they also have some state-of-the-art delivery systems. They own their own trucks, and these are really fascinating units. Compartments that, I won't even call them cages, the compartments that the animals are in are climate controlled, humidity controlled. They have self-cleaning processes, and it's not that they're rinsed down because they don't want to get the animals wet, but they have a cleaning system that keeps the units clean all the time, and then the drivers are required periodically to pull aside and go back and check and make sure that all of the systems are operating so that the animals are not placed in any kind of discomfort or mistreatment, because the value of their product is determined by the quality of the product that's delivered to the pet stores. And so the profit motive has led to an emphasis on quality at Hunt that has gotten to the point that now a hunt certification really in most of the United States carries with it a higher degree of value than an American Kennel Club designation for quality and for genetic certification. And so as a result, because of their location, much of the breeding has become concentrated in areas that are geographically proximate to that buying center, and that's why it's economically a significant part of agriculture in our state.
Senator, I'm sure you're aware, but I know that the Professional Breeders Group and the Hunt Corporation are working with USDA to help see what other things they can do to raise the quality of the pets grown in Missouri.
Yeah, they work very closely with the USDA, and in fact, when they have their annual breeders conferences, the USDA participates in workshops and training, and really they have a very high regard for the Hunt Corporation and encourage the kind of system that's been developed there as a model and example for how this industry should exist all over the country. And they've also attempted to work with the Missouri Department of Agriculture in the same way. And so there are a lot of the term puppy mill is a term that is intended to be pejorative, and if that term is applied broadly to everybody that's a dog breeder, it's an unfair term. It's a pejorative. It's almost like, to use the term puppy mill, it's almost like using racial slurs, because it's intended to create a bias. It's intended to label an entire industry in a pejorative way, and so anyone who uses that term is using it in a way that is designed to encourage and instill bias.
It is a highly emotional term intended to carry a negative message.
Yeah, and anybody who uses the word puppy mill ought to explain what it is and who they mean by it. And they certainly shouldn't use that term in a way that's attempted to broadly brush every person participating in an entire industry, like the dog breeding industry in the United States.
This is a multi-million dollar industry, and there are a number of families that depend on this industry to supplement income and to put kids through college and to pay taxes. And you know, there's no better enterprise in my mind than animals to teach kids responsibility, give them
right.
Chores, let them understand what life is about. And, there, you know, there's life and there's death in all parts of our lives, but this gives you an opportunity to know if you treat animals well, then you succeed. If you abuse animals, then you fail.
And that's right. And there are bad actors in every area. There are beef producers that are not good quality business people. There are pork producers. There are poultry producers. There are automobile dealers. I mean, they're
There's hardware store owners.
There are always bad actors in every industry. But to try,
even politicians,
but to try to broadly use a term in a way that's intended to be pejorative to an entire industry, and an industry where the majority of the participants live and work and are residents and taxpayers of the state of Missouri, is troublesome to me. And I think that when we discuss this, it should be done in a way that people are respectful of the honest, hardworking, committed dog breeders who are trying to achieve excellence and in a humane way produce a quality product that is meaningful to families and pet lovers all over the United States. And I appreciate the inquiry and the opportunity to make sure that we don't allow or tolerate this kind of attempt to broadly brush an industry. One of the statistics the last time this debate occurred that was interesting to me was there was outrage that the Better Business Bureau in St. Louis found, I think, 260-some unresolved complaints. Well, the Hunt Corporation alone had 90,000 transactions last year, and that would mean for just that one company, if all of the complaints were attributed to them, that would mean 1/3 of 1% of the transactions resulted in an unsatisfied customer. I don't know any industry in the United States that wouldn't be thrilled with a 99.966 success rate in customer satisfaction. And yet to distort and twist and suggest that this number, 260, some kind of a big, evil, raw, bad number, is really a perversion of the analysis.
Senator, you're absolutely right, and it's amazing to me how quickly we will accept some source not related to the industry over what the industry has.
People who've never been to the facility, and yet in their reports say that the glossy pictures are untrue. I've actually been to the facility, and the glossy pictures are in fact true. It is the best of its kind in the world. But there's a difference between those of us who've seen it and those who haven't. And those of us who have seen it are highly complimentary, and those who haven't are critical. And so, but you know, I guess we have to be forgiving of words that are expressed out of ignorance.
Senator, I think you may be right. It's just what we live with, and I think that's the reason to have an amendment like this that requires 2/3 majority, because somehow we need. I mean, folks that don't have the privilege of being around these facilities, really, it's easy to paint a picture for them that's very damning, and so.
Well, I can assure you that nobody is more interested in discouraging and dealing with and eliminating bad actors than the honest, hardworking dog breeders in our state who are committed to excellence in their industry. They are more offended by bad practices than anybody in this room is, and because it's a threat to their livelihood and a threat to their reputation. So, but again, the marketplace works, and quality leads to financial success, and that's why I'm very proud of the fact that the best dog breeders in the world live and work in the state of Missouri.
You know, Senator, you brought something up the last time you were talking about this, puppy petters.
Right.
I'm wondering what the qualifications for that job is, and whether. When I get through with this, maybe that is the job I need to.
I don't know, but you know, when I was going through the plan and I saw, and I, it's just every so many times a day. I think it's more than once a half hour actually. They go through and they take out the little animals and they pet them and they talk to them, and you know what? It just looks like a pretty appealing job to me. I think puppy petting would be a pretty cool thing to do.
Sounds good to me, too, Senator. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Thanks for the inquiry.
Senator from Saline.
Mr. President, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
The Senator from Saline has moved the Senate substitute for House Committee substitute for H.J.R. 86. Does any other Senator desire to be heard on that substitute? The Senator from Monroe, for what reason do you seek recognition?
May I inquire the Senator from Dent?
The Senator from Dent, do you yield to the inquiry from the Senator from Monroe?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Yes, Senator, good morning. I heard you discuss it earlier, some of the issues behind this. And tell me, do you know about the number of registered breeders that we have, facilities we have in the state?
I'd have to go to back and look for sure to know exactly, but somewhere 1,200 seems to come to mind, something about that number.
Yeah, And do you recall just this past year, you know, we're in a time where we're talking about tax credits and we have to eliminate, we have to lean down government, we have to quit spending so much money, you know, to get jobs.
Yep.
And I find it highly interesting that what we're seeing today and why the need for a resolution like this is it's really a clash of cultures right now.
Right.
And I don't know how. I wish there was a way that we could do an educational process that would simply talk about the practical aspects of what could happen to Missouri.
Right.
If we don't protect an industry. And Senator, do you recall, I don't remember how many jobs we were supposed to create in Northwest Missouri, but we were willing to spend into hundreds of millions to bring an industry to the state of Missouri.
To get there, yeah. To try to bring the industries from outside, anywhere across the country. I mean, we're competing, state to state's competing. We're trying to get businesses to come in here. We're trying to do things, whatever it is. Yeah, the senator from St. Charles has, you know, legislation out there that's trying to drive economic development, try and bring businesses into the state. But the first thing that you got to do for economic development is maintain what you got.
Yeah, remember, I've talked about in committee, so there's another sound, and those of us who've been around just a while, remember when Ross Perot ran for office, and remember he had a lot, it's a sucking sound
that
of jobs
sucking
leaving.
Sucking sound of jobs leaving because of the NAFTA.
And you know, both you and I farm. And I guess we have to live with the practicality of the decisions that we make every day to sustain our livelihood on our farm.
And our industry.
And sometimes those involve some pretty tough choices that we've had to make. And you know, and I think you've done it, my kids, you've watched them have a, if you will, we would call it a project.
Yep.
And they give that animal great care.
My kids call them chores.
I think we need to communicate it in a way that people might understand that we've been trained in a practicality. That when our kids had those projects, beef calf, you know, they fed that calf, they groomed that calf, they washed that calf, they cut that calf. That calf probably got treated better than kids in third world nations. Guarantee it did. And that's great, and we want our animals treated like that, but I think the real lesson, and where the clash of the culture comes in, is that we taught our kids that there is an end game to what happens here. And I can remember that pain as a small child, having to know that I was taking that animal within a ring to sell. That animal,
and all that work that you'd done.
Yeah, and the close attachment. So I think what I'm trying to say is that there is a reason we're doing this. It's because there is still a practicality aspect out here in agriculture. You can, no matter how you legislate, no matter how you draw up an initiative petition, there is still a practical aspect. And I heard you allude to, and I just wanted to reemphasize that back in the late 90s, there was a huge, huge exodus from people raising hogs in my district. And it's why
Did hogs get down to?
8 cents. And we had 1,000 farmers out here, and I was right at the head of that on this front lawn when we had some legislation we would like to get passed.
8 cents.
8 cents.
Mr. President. Senator. Three senators, would you please place this bill on the informal calendar?